And we're back here on Unusual Sources 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, our online streaming service. And of course, we podcast and we'll give you information about that later on today. But right now, we're very pleased to have with us right here in the studio, author Michael Springate. And we're going to be discussing his new book, which is being launched in Hamilton this Saturday. And that book is The Beautiful West and the Beloved of God. So Michael, thank you very much for being in the studio with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, we're so grateful that you're here right with us, because often we do interviews by phone, and that's something of an alienating process. You don't see the people. You just hear them through whatever connection we can manage here at CFMU, and only one person can talk at a time usually. But you know, we have Doug with us, of course, he's read the book. He's actually read the whole book, so he's going to give you an insider's perspective, or he's going to give the listeners an insider's perspective on the book. I'm going to be giving an outsider's perspective, as I only have the Cole's notes. So I guess we have somewhat two different perspectives here, and that's good, because there's going to be varying levels of familiarity with the book. I mean, I should start out by saying Michael launched the book in Toronto recently, so that's very good. We'll be asking about that, but the Hamilton listeners may not be as familiar with Michael. So, Michael, I was wondering if you could start just by telling us a bit about yourself.
Okay, let's go back a little bit. I'll try to keep it short, but born in 1952 to an English mother and a father who fought with the British Army. So, in fact, I'm part of the and they had four children. They had eight children in all. They had four children in England, and then they moved to Canada. So it's part of that European emigration post-Second World War, and they had four more children in Canada, so we have eight in all. I'm the seventh. I'm the youngest boy. And I grew up in East End, Montreal, which is Rosemount. And then for high school, I went to Quebec City High School in Quebec City. So, in fact, I was very much surrounded by French culture. And I came back to Montreal and dropped out of McGill my first year, and then went to the Montreal Museum School of Fine Art, which I loved. And for God knows what reason, I started an experimental theater company while in a visual arts school. And that led to a career, in fact, in theater. I've been artistic director of Playwrights Workshop Montreal, Factory Theater in Toronto, and Prairie Theater Exchange in Winnipeg. And since then, I've been engaged in film, both documentaries and fiction features. And I've been more and more engaged in writing. So really, I like to think of myself as a writer, and I work very hard at it.
Sounds to me like Bait Zetoun in Toronto will be an appropriate venue for you. I know that you're going to be unveiling the book there as well. They have a variety of arts and culture that's presented there regularly. So, I mean, in terms of authors, often the best ones are those that have had a varied life with exciting experiences. And there you have been doing artistic presentations. You have an interesting family, theatrical work. This is the kind of a thing we're hoping for in a Canadian-born author or a Canadian-bred author, you know, one that...
Well, it's an interesting insight that you're discussing. Not that long ago, I was working for $20 an hour with a moving company, and there were only two of us in the truck. And the guy who owned the truck and owned the moving company was Iraqi. And he had an influence on me because I worked with him very hard. We sweated together many days. And I was able to use that experience for one of the characters in the book, actually. And I feel that I have an insight on what it's like to work very hard for very little money and what kind of clientele you actually attract or don't attract. On the other hand, I have produced a feature film. And in Montreal, I was working for a film production company, and one of the characters, Joshua, in fact, is an executive producer who is a lawyer who seeks financing for films. Both of those characters, quite different culturally, are rooted in my own personal experience.
Well, I'm a McMaster graduate. Part of what I studied was labor studies. It turns out a lot of the best labor researchers, labor studies authors, and labor economists are people that did a lot of grunt work as well, maybe just as a student or for other reasons. They can inform people about day-to-day life and realities and bring that to an academic setting, an academic writing. But what caught me about what you said also was you had met this person of Iraqi origin. And I was wondering about that because, I mean, this book, it deals with issues related to the Middle East or the war on terror and so on. And I was wondering, you know, given this extremely interesting background that you have, this varied background, and all the things you've done in the past, as you say, making a feature film and the theater work, was it your experiences meeting people like that Iraqi gentleman or other Canadians that compelled you to turn around and write something about the, you know, Middle East related topics in Canada?
It's a difficult question to answer with concision. I want to say that I think the origin of this novel is in shock. I think I was shocked by the foreign policy, the domestic leanings, the lack of honesty. It wasn't as if we were all fooled in terms of what was happening, let's say in 2002 prior to the Iraq invasion, or why there was an invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. I was shocked by our culture's inability to speak truly. And so I wanted to put together the characters who could in fact speak truly, but only within my own range of experience. I am no Middle East scholar, but Mahfouz, who's one of the two major characters, is a composite of many people I do know. There's a large Arab population in Montreal, and it speaks French fluently, in fact. And part of it comes from the colonial aftereffects of France and in Africa. And Mahfouz is part of that. So the shock of the moral abandonment and the lack of public honesty in our society is, I think, what motivated this novel and what allowed me to say, write the novel, not a play, so that I would have the time to construct it as honestly as I could without an intermediary between me and the audience.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there. That is, it's always advised to write what you know. And as a Canadian, you know that in both French Canada and English Canada, Arab and Muslim Canadians are an increasingly important part of our cultural experience here. And you witnessed dishonesty, discrimination, things like that, and were able to write about it. And that, I think for our listeners, we should maybe take an opportunity to expound a little on the book itself. And just in terms of the themes and general ideas it's covering, what would you say the book is about?
Let's take a look at the title. The two main characters are Elena and Mahfouz. Elena is the child of an ex-Hutterite. I don't know if all your listeners will know what a Hutterite is, but the Hutterite movement, in fact, is a direct child of the Reformation. And there are colonies in Western Canada. And when I was artistic director of Prairie Theatre Exchange, I lived beside, in fact, an ex-Hutterite who had left the colony, who had a child. And I was introduced to some of the moral courage and moral dilemmas of having a Hutterite background in contemporary Canadian society. And then I wanted to take the child and bring her into Quebec. So Elena, in fact, is Helen, Hellenic, Western, Greek, Helen, the great beauty stolen. So I knew I was dealing with, in some ways, the best traditions of Western society, I felt, and therefore called it the beautiful West, from the name Elena. And Mahfouz grew up in Montreal. I mean, Mahfouz's hometown is Montreal. And there's often a mistake when you say that someone is a Muslim that we think that they're somehow radicalized or even not as secular as we think we are. But many, many, many Arabs are entirely secular as Muslims. So I wanted a character who was really quite secular, whose childhood memories were Montreal memories, who understood Montreal as a city, who spoke three languages, as most immigrant workers do, and who felt comfortable in Montreal. And the name Mafouz actually means, in the way that names can have a meaning, means protected by God or beloved of God. So Ellen and Mafouz, their relationship became the beautiful West and the beloved of God. And as a novel, it actually situates us that we are, in fact, looking at a fusion of two historical consciousnesses.
Right. I mean, you could call it a fusion, or you could call it a contradiction, too. I mean, just in terms of Western civilization itself, you have universality, but you also have othering, you know, and orientalizing. You have freedom and you have slavery. And I think these dynamics are likely present. I mean, you know, in terms of unfreedom, I understand that the father of the male protagonist in the novel, he's arrested on a security certificate. And his mother is repeatedly questioned by CSIS. And I'm just wondering, is this part of a larger view or statement that you're making on the security certificate process? Were you looking at the trials of the Secret Trial 5 or anything like that?
Yeah, I was very influenced by them. I did a lot of research on all of them. Mafouz is not any of them, but his situation is informed by their actual histories. The security certificates was a great example of othering. They were found, in fact, illegal to be done with Canadian citizens. And the law was marginally changed, in fact, so it could be done to those who didn't have yet their Canadian citizenship. And there was a constant desire by the current federal government to allow the federal government to determine Canadian citizenship retroactively as well, effectively. I'm shocked that we are allowing such an important part of our political moral history, that is citizenship and the role of the citizen in the state, to be at the whim of a political bureaucracy. I'm shocked by that. And in the last line of the book, funny enough, they just call Mafouz an Egyptian national. So the fact that he came exceptionally young to Canada, the fact that he is a Canadian, is wiped out. So yes, I want to deal with the political ramifications of othering. I want to deal with Islamophobia. It's endemic. It's endemic and it's almost institutionalized. And I want to deal with the lack of honesty in the public forums. And I also, and this perhaps I'll just come to the point. There's a Zionist and there's an anti-Zionist, and in fact they're married. And that's not that untypical either. If you know Montreal, there's a strong Jewish community in Montreal. There's a strong anti-Zionist Jewish community there as well. And there's a strong Zionist community. And they have a role to play in the book. So it's a pretty broad view of the conflicts that you are suggesting.
I mean, what you're describing here, it sounds like you've weaved together all the topics we've been discussing on this radio program for the last 10 or 13 years. This program started up as a consequence of the so-called War on Terror in 2002, when Canada was sending troops to Afghanistan and when Bush was getting ready to invade Iraq. We started broadcasting to confront this agenda. And in that time, we've witnessed the growth of Islamophobia. We've witnessed the security certificates. And we've witnessed this strange concept of citizenship where you can be a sort of hyphenated Canadian, right? Where you're not a Canadian, you're a Pakistani Canadian, or, you're an Egyptian Canadian. And so you're not a real Canadian. You are some kind of hyphenate before Canadian. And Doug and I also talk about the migrant farm workers and how they're being abused. And it fits into this recurring issue of citizenship in this country, where it seems that the government's model for the ideal citizen is a temporary citizen, one whose citizenship can be revoked. And this book is coming out at a time when all these issues are coming to the fore, because we have what the government is calling a terrorist attack. And they've labeled this as a Muslim terrorist attack because the people that did this had recently self-converted to Islam or something like that. There was a right right-wing shooter out in the East Coast. What, New Brunswick shot three Mounties. They didn't call that terrorism. So, you know, there's a way in which these events are perceived, and we see a similar and larger dynamic in the United States with regard to how incidents are perceived. And now I understand that the government is reviewing security legislation. It was under review when the Ottawa shooting happened, and it's my understanding they're talking about ways to revoke citizenship or reverse it or something like that. So I guess, as Canadians, if you listen to any Canadian radio program that looks into our culture and our literary history, what it means to be Canadian, what it means to be a citizen, has always been an uncertain affair in this country. But now it just seems to have gone right off the cliff.
I have two comments. I think that shock, I use the word shock, to realize that we are in a different historical period of time, which is at the origin of this, and perhaps you shared it, and that's one of the reasons you started the radio show. I think it's was shared by many. I mean, I look at the Real News, actually, and I think that's a wonderful example of pushing back by trying to speak honestly. And one of his programs is Reality Asserts Itself. And I think of there's a website called Revolting Europe, which is also part of that. And also the website Going to Tehran, which used to be Race for Iran. And what's interesting here is that intellectuals and activists are beginning to reorganize and talk amongst themselves and understand that their role is not to stand at the waiting room hoping for a job in the mainstream institutions. Their role, in fact, is to initiate a public, honest, and vital discourse in the most immediate way possible. And I think that challenge is ever so slowly beginning to be met, and it's an exceptionally exciting challenge. You are right that the government perceives citizenship as a provisional something that they can give and take away.
Right? Privilege.
Privilege. It's a provisional privilege, especially with the temporary workers program. But it is not a provisional privilege. In fact, it is a birthright citizenship. And many people have fought very hard over many hundreds of years to achieve this. And we'd be very, very foolish to let it slip away. And let it slip away because we're frightened to speak the truth. We're frightened to bring an historical analysis to our contemporary situation.
You go to law school here and they'll tell you how important the Magna Carta is, founding all sorts of English traditions and legal traditions. And in the United States, they talk about the Constitution, their precious Constitution, the founding document of America, a perfect document that should never be changed. And in the last 13 years, they've shredded the Constitution in the United States and they've forgotten about the Magna Carta here. So as you say, shock is perhaps the appropriate metaphor.
And habeas corpus, that is, you know, can you be a criminal without a crime? Well, right now you can be a criminal without a crime.
That's right. That's what the new legislation in the last month has been, to bring in this idea that some kind of preventative detention or something, where they want to just take you away without charge and trial because you might do something, according to someone.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I just read the book a few days ago. And it's really an interesting read, and you know, you mentioned shock because the reader's actually taken down the garden path a bit. You know, it starts out developing the characters, and you feel a lot of empathy for them. You know, Hafuz developing, you know, his life in Canada, and the same with Alina, and so on, and then. Suddenly, bang, there's this shock, you know, that the security establishments in Egypt and in Canada just start destroying their lives. I reflected on this because I thought, you know, we know this happens, but it's in the abstract. You know, we know the names of the people that have gone through this. But I think with the vehicle of the novel and developing the characters and so on, you can just sort of feel the horrible impact that this all has, not just on Apu's and his father, but, you know, the whole family. The business goes bankrupt. Like, there's all these repercussions that we generally tend not to think of. So I thought it was a very effective vehicle for just showing the human impact of this security apparatus that we've allowed to, you know, basically take over institutions.
Well, I thank you, Doug. I'm interested in character. I want the historical facts as they are lived and experienced. All my life in theater, in fact, I've been working with writers to try to create realistic and genuine characters. And realistic and genuine characters whose speech somehow convinces us that that's what they intend to say or meant to say or how they would speak. So the challenge, in fact, was to create characters that you would like. Not because I'm cunning and manipulative, but rather simply because you would like them. These are people among us and you would like them. And then their life is, in fact, affected by the security establishments in Egypt and then Canada in exceptionally harsh and uncompromised ways. I want the conversation about politics to be colloquial in a way. I worry about sharpening too much an ideological language that doesn't include the experiences of people, be they working people, be they on the bad side, quote unquote, or the good side. I want their experiences. We have to also listen closely to those people who are implementing some of these wrong-headed laws. And we have to listen closely to those who are cruel as well as to those who suffer cruelty. I mean that quite genuinely, because once we stop listening to the experiences of the people involved, we no longer actually understand, no matter how well we can speak about it. So I am character-driven, and I think the novel ultimately is character-driven as well.
Yeah, it seems to me, with the issues this is touching on, this should be a Canadian cultural touchstone. It should be something that's emblematic of our era. I think this is something that CBC should be interviewing you about, and I'm glad we're able to do that as part of the independent media. I'm glad we have campus radio stations that can do this sort of thing. I know the Taylor Report promoted your event as well. That reminds me, I mean, this is part of an anti-war coalition event, the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. You contacted the HSW to see if they could help with the book launch. So because of these dynamics, because of these issues with security certificates and the whole relationship to the war on terror, is that why you approached an anti-war group?
I have four children. My youngest went to McMaster. She graduated about a year ago in the Joint Arts and Science program. And she said she would help me organize the readings. And she contacted the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, saying that she had been involved in some of the actions and would they like to support this book, which she felt was an anti-colonialist, anti-Islamophobic novel. They contacted me and said, could they read the novel? And I was very happy to send them. And that's how it happened. I'm at the very early stages now of looking for allies and trying to promote the novel. You know, the book is only published now. I'm hoping it'll find friends and the friends will speak to other friends and some sort of word of mouth will occur. I'm very aware that, to some, this novel is hard. They don't want to hear what happens to the central character. They don't want to believe that marriages are split up over Zionism. They don't want to fully grasp their own complicity in the lack of a pushback. So I'm going to depend, and I hope to depend, on just word of mouth. People read it. They say, I liked it. Maybe, you know, my sister will like it. Maybe this person will like it. Maybe this teacher will like it. Maybe this book club will have a discussion of it. I agree with you. In fact, I think many, many of the strands that we've been discussing over the last 15 years are in this novel and have been managed in such a way that is still a character-based novel that is exciting to read. I believe that's the case. Let's see how well it endures. Let's see if it can pick up some momentum and if it can hold its own over a period of time.
Okay. Well, I guess just one final question for me, at least. And that is, you've mentioned this Jewish couple or pro-Israel or pro-Zionist, anti-Zionist, and what you've described of Montreal sounds like what I've heard as well. We've done a lot of work on this program with the Independent Jewish Voices. Mm. They have a strong contingent in Montreal, where there is obviously much dialogue and activity on these subjects. Mm. And of course, in Quebec, you often find anti-colonial activity. That's where the Canada Haiti Action Network had a disproportionate number of members. And now, yes, Independent Jewish Voices. So, of course, we've seen all of these fierce debates about Palestine. I'm just wondering how, in what way do you think that those debates about Israel, Palestine within a Jewish family relate to the other issues in the novel?
I tried to deal with this actually very explicitly in the novel. For some reason, we have this understanding that if you are pro-Arab, somehow you are anti-Jewish, and vice versa. And it's clearly wrong. And it's clearly bigoted and narrow-minded. In fact, Josh, one of the characters, is very wary of those people who are trying to force false divisions on these peoples and on these faiths. So how does that... It's the reality that you live in Montreal. It's the Zionist... Josh's father and grandfather, when they speak of anti-Semitism, they understood it as people complaining about the Jewish organizing influence on the left. Anybody who knows Montreal history knows that Jews were critical in the organizing of labor on the left, and that this anti-Semitism, in fact, came from the right. But somehow we live in a time now where it's perceived that anti-Semitism is because they are on the right. So how did that happen historically? How did this switch happen? And how true is the representation that we have now? It's being fought out in the various communities. And so I'm hoping, and I believe it to some extent that it has proven itself, the novel is creating conversations among all three faiths, because all three major faiths, Christian, Muslim, Judaism, all claim to a certain extent to be the beloved of God. And they're all claiming their place in the beautiful West, all three of them. And I've had readers, Iranian readers, Iraqi, Syrian, and Egyptian readers, and who have been surprised, in fact, by the depth of the disputes within the Jewish community. So my hope is that the novel allows a certain opening of windows between all three communities, if possible.
And certainly work along those lines has occurred and proceeded along in Hamilton as well on those very issues. So I'm glad to see that your book is able to encapsulate that. I don't think we could have wrapped it up any better than that. So let me just remind our listeners, we're discussing the book The Beautiful West and the Beloved of God by Michael Springate. Now, this book is launching in Hamilton. It's launching this Saturday. Doug, it's going to be at 3 o'clock p.m.
3 o'clock at Homegrown Cafe. That's on King William, just a little bit east of James Street.
That's 27 King William.
27
right?
King
it's really
William.
Easy to get to.
There's, yeah, and it's a nice, it'll be, it's a nice place because it's a more intimate setting. You can have a coffee, and I'm sure there'll be some interesting discussions come out.
It's just one block from Jackson Square, so if you can get to Jackson Square, you know, So this book will be on sale. How much is it selling for?
$25.
Okay, and you'll be autographing the book and whatnot.
If anybody should want.
Okay, so that's 3 o'clock this Saturday. November 5th or 7th or what is that? This Saturday.
It's November 8th, Saturday, November 8th.
Okay.
And I do want to thank the McMaster students in solidarity for Palestinian human rights and McMaster Muslims for peace and justice who have joined with the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War to support the book.
Well, that's great. They should get out there on the Facebook page and sign people up for that. I know there is a Facebook page. So, well that's great. We'll let people know, our listeners online. So, Michael, again, on behalf of everyone, thanks for coming into the program with us today.
I sincerely thank you.